that would be a very good topic of conversation.
Yeah, if I knew anything about it. Hmm. But that's never stopped me either, so why not?
All right, this is podcast 6.
Hunt the Fly.
Take 1.
Hunt the Fly.
I love that one. Hunt the Fly with Kelly Gallup.
I forgot that one.
Yeah, it's a good one. I like that name.
I think it kind of covers all the bases, too, because it's the fly. It's not just streamers.
Well, it's a good thing you don't have the final say.
It's very true.
There we go. Got that out of the way.
Yep.
All right.
What's your other
back.
Favorite?
What's the other favorite?
Sorry.
Fuck Kelly.
That's basically. Kelly podcast.
Who was that one?
That was me. Oh. I just wrote in.
You wrote in?
Yeah.
That's nice.
Burner account.
See, that's... Yeah.
It's called San Pedro 7984.
That's nice. The difference between you and me. I never say things like that.
No, you never do. Never put your foot in your mouth either.
Mm. Long ways up there.
Phew.
All right, you guys ready?
I think so.
We haven't started?
No.
I thought we already started.
No. Jesus Christ. Who's running this show?
Do you have to swear so much?
Well, I had a great teacher.
Mm. All right, can we save some of this for when we start?
You can use all of it.
Okay.
So here we are.
All right.
You properly
We're back. Hydrated.
Welcome back to episode 6.
What's your sister's name?
Riley.
Riley? New chair. Check it out. No squeak. And for all the rest of you are going, God, what do you get?
Why are you bringing up his sister?
Because she bitched about my chair. She said she couldn't watch it because it's you know?
Gotcha.
Me and me fidgeting around shit. But your giant ass has got it squeakless over there. But you can't roll because the wheels are all broke.
I ain't rolling.
Here you go.
Now we're rolling.
We're rolling.
Okay.
So
did we just start?
Just so Riley knows, I kept thinking it was Aaron. Oh. Aaron.
Riley.
Aaron.
Yeah. Sorry, Riley.
All right. Well,
come see us more. We'd know.
All right. Welcome back to episode 6 of the Slide In Podcast. I am Braden Anderson. I am alongside Kelly Gallup, who doesn't need an introduction, nor shall he get one. Wow. If I seem a little stupid today, more so than normal, I apologize. I hit my head pretty hard skiing 2 days ago. Alongside me.
I haven't noticed.
You get a fog?
Yeah, a little fog.
That's really neat because that way the two of you together.
Yeah.
It's so
we got about
collectively you might have a
he
brain.
He seems normal. Actually, seems a little smarter than usual.
All right, well, maybe
Kicked
it's good.
In the head by a meal. All
right. On my right, we have a very special guest who will get an introduction.
Oh, boy.
He is our GM, our head guide, our minister of culture, the Beaver, Johnny
the
McClure.
Beaver. The Beaver.
Got anything else there, Kelly?
No, I'll find something, though, I'm sure.
Yep.
All right, well, Johnny is an incredible fishing guide. I'm sure some of you have had the chance to be in a boat with him. If you haven't, good luck. He has very few days available every year. So I wanted to kind of go into what makes Johnny a great guide. Johnny hates receiving compliments, so this is going to make him a little fidgety and uncomfortable, I'm sure.
I'm doing it right now.
In my mind, there's three things that go into... kind of making you a great fishing guide. One, you're fishy. We're going to get into kind of more of what that means. I'm going to flip that over to you guys as a question. Two, work ethic. I think there are very few people in the world that work as hard at their job as Johnny does at being a fishing guide. Three, you're not a small human being. So this river, for those of
we
you
look
that
the
don't
same
know,
height because I made him lower his chair that far.
Yeah. This river's really fast, and it's really hard to recirculate runs. And there's one or two guides on the river that can do it. Johnny's one of them. So I'm done boosting your ego now. So I'll flip it over
what
to you.
What little there is. Yeah.
What when you think fishy, it. What do you think of? What makes someone fishy?
What makes someone fishy? People who fish a lot. You can't be fishy without first fishing. I think that the more kind of experience you have on the water, the more you pick up certain things and certain details. Every water is a little bit different. Every piece of every section of water is a little bit different. The people who spend the most time on it can try and figure out kind of what it is that can make someone successful or not when they're there. And when you get to, I mean, Depends on what you're looking for. I mean, and what people want out of fishing. Do you want to catch a lot? Do you want the big ones? Do you want, you know, a little bit of everything? Are you well-versed in nymphs, dries, streamers, whatever? It takes a lot to be well-versed in nymphs, dries, and streamers because they all require a lot of time. I would say in the recent years, I probably have put the bobber down more in the last 10 years than I did in the beginning of my guide career. So I would say I'm probably more versed on dry flies, dry droppers, streamers. There's probably a lot better guides than me on the river now with indicators, mostly because they're rolling them every day, and I don't as much anymore. It's just not as interesting, but I still do it. But getting back to fishy, I don't know. Just some guys look at a piece of water, and they get it. Kelly was talking about, was it last podcast or the one before, where some people just have a harder time reading water than others. And it's just, it's one of those things that it's you can't write about it. You have to fish.
That's how you said, time on the water.
Time on the water.
There's a point where you just see through it. Yep. And it doesn't just happen because you walk out. And, you know, when you were saying about time on the water, last year or so, I started watching podcasts and listening to them. And one of the things that you said was time on the water. And when I thought back, I was watching, I think the, might have been Carter Andrews or somebody. And they said, it seems no matter what you talk about, when you're talking to somebody else, you know, like Andy's talking to Carter or whoever he's talking to, they always bring up, you know, that guy's been here for 43 years. You know, they'll always say, there's like this badge of honor that comes with dissecting water like you did for 24 years, whatever it is you've been here. Well, too long.
Too long.
But there's this thing about, and we kind of hit that last week, I mean, about the guides having to fish, that our rule, when we did that rule thing or whatever, not the rule, but the reasons for getting you fired. And, you know, how you have to, like, part of Johnny's job is to make sure that the guides don't quit and our employees don't quit fishing. And because then you're a shop rat that doesn't do anything but talk shit. There was this ongoing thing with Johnny for the first, how long have you been here anyway?
23 years.
And I'd say, where are you fishing tonight? I don't know. Because it was true.
I always had it in my head where I wanted to, but you had to have a beer. When you go to the Madison at 6 o'clock after work or 5:30, there's going to be some areas that are a little bit more crowded than others. So you have your plan A. I want to go to $3 Bridge River Right and go up. Well, if there's 10 cars there, I might reconsider that. Right. Maybe go down. I think I always, the first 2 years I was here, I didn't have a boat. Yeah. So I pretty much exclusively just fish the wade stretch every day. That was about it. But getting back to that fishing thing, you know where I got that? I mean, aside from just wanting to go fishing every day, Rusty Gates, he had a quote in, I believe it was Fly Fisherman or somewhere else, and it said, as a shop employee or a shop owner, if you're not out there at least 5 nights a week, you're not doing your job.
Yeah.
So if you're not out there, how are you supposed to pass on information to the people who come and saying, how's the fishing? You know, I mean, part of being a shop guy is you have to fish. That's part of the job, and it shouldn't be a job.
That's how you got here. You like to fish, and then you like to fish, and then you quit.
Yeah.
Especially guides. I don't get it. And they do, man. They just, it's like the rule, our guides, third year I start watching them. They start drinking more than they fish. You just know you don't have a career.
It's tough. I mean, guiding, you put a lot of energy into it, and you're tired, and you got stuff to do at the end of the day. It's a lot easier. Like, when I was in my 20s and early 30s, it was no problem. Like, get done, go fishing, come back, make lunches, get everything ready. But when you get older, I'm spent. Like, when I'm done.
Yeah, but there's more to it. There's that your day off. I mean, and I've said this many times to many people asking the question, it's hard to find a full-time guide that fishes, actually goes fishing. There's only a handful of Jack Fords in the world. Mm-hmm. What is Jack, 83, 4, 5?
I don't know.
Still on the river all the time for himself, just fishing, right? And it's hard to find. And that's where you get the burnout when you mm-hmm. when you can't say, I mean, when I remember when I hired Russ, mm-hmm. I think he's like 19.
How old was he?
19, I 19. Think. And he worked for some other shop, and he wants to work for me. And I said, why do you want to work for me? He says, you're the only guy I know that fishes more than I do. And you're the only shop owner I know that fishes ever. I was like, you know, but I would get done with guide trips, especially in the shit show rivers like the PM when it was just blowing up in the beginning. I think it's actually better now than that first burst. And you go out and fish, and it was like just a shit show. I mean, people everywhere doing stupid stuff and hoarding runs and just things that shouldn't be happening, which probably aren't anymore. And I would just have to go and fish a run at night just to see no people. Oh my God, they still do what they're supposed to do. Or just to defrag, just yeah. like, geez, it can't always be like this, right? Instead of going, I had plenty of bar time too.
Yeah.
That was after dark though.
I don't know how you did it all.
But it was like, I could not fathom. I actually would get angry at myself if I didn't go fish. And I'd see you get pissy. You didn't get angry at yourself. There's this giant freaking beaver running around all pissed off. And you didn't get to fish last night. But I think that's critical. I mean, to be the guide you became, it was from just immersing yourself so far into it. And then that work ethic thing, G-Y-A-O-B-A, get your ass out of bed club. I mean, people used to ask me that because when I would do, you used to ask me, I said, well, get out of bed. Mm-hmm. Just go. You're always, I'm kind of a little past that 5 a.m. thing right now, but.
5 a.m. is late.
Yeah, it used to be for me. Now I'm not so ramped up in the middle of the winter to go out and play, but I think that's the only true, like I got a Christmas card from Will Godfrey. Did you read that? Mm-mm. It was sitting on the desk.
I don't look at another.
The hell you mail. Don't? Y'all open my freaking mail. You open my goddamn offense. Checks.
Yeah.
Are you shitting me? Then well, we get that's one different. That's really to all of
that's
us.
That's different.
But Will Godfrey, you know, is an integral guy in the Henry's Fork and all that. And then over on the John Day and the Clearwater, he's a big steelhead guy. Inducted into the Hall of Fame last year. Very cool. But I don't remember how old Will is, but I was reading it, and it was, I think it was his wife writing it, and she was saying, you know, Will's real busy, had a spectacular steelhead year. The guy's in his 80s, I guarantee yeah. you. And this, and spectacular steelhead year when he wasn't training for the senior track and field Olympics. Are you shitting me?
Still got drive.
Exactly. Still and the guys drive. like you that became such great guides, that drive was because, you know, to figure it out.
Yep.
And the beauty is you never figure it out. Nobody ever figures
it out. You can't master
it.
That's the wonderful thing yeah. about it. You
water can never, changes every second.
Yeah, you can be you can be Harrop, you can be Mike Lawson and a slew of other incredible people, but at the end of the day, you're still going to get your ass kicked. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't master nature, and it's really humbling, and it generally sets you up like couple of really good days and you're feeling like, okay, I got this thing figured out, and then it's just like, all right, Zippo, nada. Although, I don't know. We're kind of getting off topic again. We started at what makes somebody what makes somebody fishy? I mean,
I don't think that was off topic. The only way you get fishy, I don't give a shit what you read, how many of these videos you watch. Your ass isn't on the water. You are, and that's completely topic. You are on the water every can't remember how many times Johnny says, let's go. It's warmed up. It's 34 degrees, Johnny. It's February. The water's going to bump down, not up. The sun's going to make
them. I think there's something else, though. I mean, like, I have no idea why. Ever since I was a kid, like, I grew up in suburban Chicago. There's not a lot of streams there. I grew up fishing plugs and panfish and smallmouth and whatever I could catch. I didn't even care if there were fish in it. If it was a little pool or a puddle, I fished it. And I didn't need to have fish there. I just really I've always just loved fishing, and I don't know why. Now I get it. It's the places it takes you. It's the people that you meet. And I just really enjoy the process of trying to figure stuff out, especially new water. That's probably my favorite thing in the world, is going to a new piece of water and trying to figure out, particularly if there happen to be large brown trout in there. That's the added incentive. But some people, I don't know, it's like natural born killers. Deer don't know why it's a deer. God just made them that way. People just inherently can, you know, be like, there's water. There might be fish in there. I would like to catch the fish and figure out how to do it in a bunch of different ways. Some people are just born fishy, and there's a lot of fishy people in this valley. We see a lot of them every day. And so I'm kind of lucky to have kind of developed out here amongst a slew of characters that really take it seriously. And you see the same guys catching the same big fish every year. There's a host of other people out there that are very talented.
This valley's got a ton.
Yeah, a ton.
It's got a big...
And just like who you start looking up to when you're first coming up. I mean, part of the thing about here is, I mean, you had been coming out for a number of years, but when you started this place... we didn't have a lot of help. I mean, we didn't have...
quite the contrary.
Yeah, we had to figure it out on our own. And we were kind of heretics anyway. I mean, you're not really fly fishing. Streamers were kind of a... We're stopping?
You finish your sentence.
All right, well, I've just stopped. We were kind of heretics from the standpoint that it was still very much, you know, a dry fly fishery, and we were kind of the new kid on the block, and you know, there are a handful of people that would stop by, but we kind of got a little, I mean, it wasn't a
cold
shoulder.
8 dozen streamers the first year.
I know.
And virtually every guide that walked in this store told me that's too bad they don't eat streamers here.
Those are Michigan flies, was my favorite one.
Those Michigan flies.
Yeah.
Well, but I mean,
I wasn't here the first year. I came here in 2003, so my second year then, but I can't imagine. Lots changed since then.
I was thinking about when you're saying about how rivers also, what you usually find in that, there's very few, when you get to rivers like this, there's very few, like Joey D likes to try to beat you out. I mean, you're that work ethic of getting up really early, but I was thinking about that, and that what really, I haven't really thought about this like we're thinking right now, but the when we started, there was not the diversity of technique being used. Like I said, it was a dry river, and the nymphing was not really blown up. Streamers, like I said, 8 dozen the first year, and a lot of pushback with the streamers.
Yep.
Like, there was it.
Pushback everywhere.
I mean, in Michigan, Rusty Gates told me I was single-handedly ruining fly fishing. We never really got along too well anyway. But
well, you kind of always prefer to be hated, so that comes into that. Rusty, I mean, remember,
Rusty and I could sit on the porch and drink while he blew his smoke at me. But when it came to like drift boats on rivers, he hated, and he didn't care for me throwing daytime streamers. He didn't mind the night streamers, but it's funny, you know, it was a pretend hatred.
Yeah.
Because then we had to go over to the place and we'd sit around and drink for an hour or two.
It really wasn't a thing out here. I mean, it was. The only other people that were kind of, like the core guys at Yellowstone Angler, like back in the mid-2000s, and those guys were streamer guys.
George has always been.
Yeah, George has always been, from what I understand. I never met George.
That's why we don't have, they didn't have one fly doesn't have sinking lines, because George would kick everybody's ass so bad.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, they had
there's a heretic.
Doug and Brian when they were kind of there, and then Jamie. Those guys were always catching huge fish, and they were streamer guys. But other than that, you just really didn't see.
Even go back to like Dan Bailey. If you go into Bailey's, and that was one of my favorite traditions in the West. And I don't know what happened with that place. I hope.
Were you there when the ladies were tying?
Yeah.
Cool. I would have liked to have seen that.
But it was never. I mean, they did a lot of flies, but they still had a. He was importing, and he was Bailey's was the first company that I bought all my stuff from. Well, that's how I outfitted my first trout show. When I opened the Troutsman, he was a distributor, and that basically my entire store was all from Bailey's when it first started, and a lot of my flies and stuff like that. But if you went in that store, you saw that on the wall. I mean, they still killed the fish, right? Whoever's calling me, stop it. How do you turn these damn things off?
You don't have to turn it off. You can just put it somewhere else.
Well, it was vibrating my ass. It was a little bit stimulating.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
But anyway, if you walked into
Bailey's. I'm putting that on Instagram.
I can't wait.
Yeah.
So you walk into Bailey's, and they had all these, they'd take boards, and they would trace the fish, and they painted them green, and they
put the weight underneath it?
They put the fly, the weight, the date, and the cat's name, and they're really cool. I mean, they're just outlines, and they're, you know, it's maybe the coolest thing in any fly shop I've ever seen. Of course, you know, you can't get the trace. You don't bring the board with you. The fish is dead, but, and so I don't know if that during catch and release, so that slowed all that down or whatever, but if you looked what caught those fish, I can't guarantee it, but and this is pre-streamer world, obviously. This is in the 70s and 80, early 80s. The number one, I think, as I recall, it's either a dark spruce or a light spruce streamer.
Cool.
Which is just not a big fly, but back then that was a big fly.
Your cougar was a huge fly.
Oh, yeah.
I remember the first time I saw a circus peanut my first year. I was like, you got to be shitting me.
Yeah. Well, no, it was way. Two flies.
Yeah. So obviously, and now, bigger than that was most. A giant fly. And now you might consider that, I mean, a medium
mid-size,
I would say. Same thing. And then the biggest fly we had in here was when Sabota actually made your fly fish with the heifer groomer, a.k.a. Fathead.
When he put the second flank on it.
Which wasn't huge, but that was the biggest fly we
It did carried. Make it fish better.
It did.
As Andy Sabota, I talked about him last week. I'm a skinny little prick. He's one of those guys. He just gets so good at something, and he quits. He told me he set a record.
That's not the frustrating thing. It's how good he gets
at the
in
next
the
thing.
Shortest amount of time possible. Yes, like, it's like, okay, I think I'll try that a year later.
He's going into jiu-jitsu.
Black belt.
He's going into jiu-jitsu. I can't wait until you get here. We'll see how you work.
Well,
but Andy is just funny cat. He's so good at everything he does, and he said he set a record last year. He thought about or did fish 1 hour. I don't know if that many ever went. But when I met that kid, I think I was at Tom Helgeson's show in Chicago, at somewhere around Chicago, and he walked up to me all 103 pounds or whatever the hell he is.
I gave him 120. Easy.
120?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, he was 6 foot or so. And he says, "You don't know me." He says, "I have never had an original idea in my life, but I sure made a lot of your flies better."
Very true.
And I thought, I wonder if he got a sternum shot, if he'd bust right in half. And I go, and I'm thinking to myself, what a, well, maybe he's, and then.
A lot of people don't know that he was one of our original guides, too.
He was the first guy that worked for
Andy
me.
And Todd.
Yeah. And. Yeah, well, Todd.
Andy, Todd, Tim, and Chris. Those were the four when I came in.
But I couldn't decide if I should kill him or hire him. So I hired him, and it seemed like everything he did, he'd take a fly and just, like the heifer groomer had a single flank up front, and he put a second one on it. And it fished better.
Yeah, it did.
A lot better.
He's the guy
that also, you don't know, he invented the Swimmy Jimmy. Which was, I have the whole trend. I was doing stacking hair and making a jointed flat.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I tripped it really tight. And he went through and he bent the front head. And
on an 8089, originally, I think. TMCO 8089,
yeah,
number 6.
That's all we used. Excuse me, we didn't have a, maybe, I can't remember.
Pretty
but
sure.
Yeah, that was, I mean, he was just one of those cats, but super fishy. I don't know. Now that's a
version. Yeah, if you want to talk about fishy, that cat is fishy.
Yeah.
It sounds like fishy is a two-part thing.
Nature and nurture. It's nature and nurture. You have to. You can't have one without the other. I really don't think.
Time on the water and mindset. Mm-hmm. And Kelly and I talked a lot about mindset in our second episode, I think. But it's got to be both. Like, you can study as much as you want. You can read as many books as you want. But, like, you have to be on the water. But then I think the same thing is true, that you can be on the water as much as you want. If you're not out there trying new things and you know, you don't have the right mindset, you're not going to get
Well, and that's
better,
just getting
right?
started. Yeah. I mean, like, mm-hmm. you can read as much as you want, but, like, where did those people who wrote it get the bulk of their information? Is it, like, an amalgamation of all the waters that they fished, or is it one specific
Kelly's
one?
Here. Can you use smaller words, please?
I'm very, very sorry. Is it a combination of all the different stuff that you've acquired? Because every river, man, is so different. Like the Madison, there's lines in the sand here, like from between the lakes, and then you've got Slide to Reynolds, and you've got Reynolds to Pine, Pine to Lyons, Lyons to Ruby, Ruby to Varney, Varney to Eight, Eight to Town, Town to Valley, Valley to Lake. They all fish different. They all have different bugs, different densities. They like certain colors. They like, so just in that river, there are six different areas where you kind of have to be on certain sections to see how you figure that out. Now you go to a river like the Yellowstone. I know I used to be obsessed with that river, and there's like 50% of it that's got trout that I've never even fished. You know, so from immigrant down to big timber, I feel comfortable there. Never fished above immigrant in my life. Never been below big timber in my life. And people fish it all the time. So, I mean, the amount of time out here that you have to spend, I mean, that was the biggest thing that I realized was, like, if I was 16 and I had $100 million and I never had to work a day in my life and I could fish 250 days a year, I wouldn't be able to learn 20% of what's out here within a 3-hour radius.
Especially so, when you throw down a Yellowstone-sized river.
Well, I mean, that's not counting the lakes.
A couple of the sections on Yellowstone are as long as our river.
Exactly.
And so, that's like, only one side of the friggin'
thing. Yeah, how do you want to...
you got to hit the rest of it.
How do you want to spend your time? Like, do you want to get to know it all? Do you want to, like... I mean, obviously, you have to spend the first couple, 3 years finding out what resonates with you. But... I mean, after that, do you want to just see it all, or do you want to take like 6 or 7 of them and really get to know each and every spot? Because a lot of the freestones here, you might fish them at 8,000, you might fish them at 500.
Right.
And all the different float times, all the different inconsistencies, all the changes that happen over the years, it takes a long time. And so that's what's so, it's a blessing. It's not a curse, it's a blessing, but you have to have some idea of what you want to do out here.
I think that's really true.
Well, I'm going to color while he talks.
What?
Kelly's
going to color?
The color? Okay.
Yeah. No, I was thinking about something else on that. That.
Like what?
Well, I just don't know. It's off track. I was letting you go, but same way, talking about how people get good, and it's like when you just covered a million things there, and I was thinking that in a lot of rivers like this, what I think elevated you and a handful of other guys, like, other than work ethic, was, and I was thinking when we were talking about the Yellowstone, and I got thinking about how, what a great fishery, when I first went to the big, and I was there the day after it opened. I was here fishing. I heard about it, went there.
Oh, you mean on the
Bighorn?
On the Bighorn.
No, the Bighorn proper.
Gotcha.
Below Yellowtail. And that's
what year?
That was 82, August 22nd, I think. something like that. And that's where I met Mike Craig. And he was there too. He was here. I think he told me he was going to buy Cameron. That thing's always been for sale, right? In the old days, you could be the mayor of Cameron because the post office was inside the bar. And
you
the
buy your way into politics.
Exactly.
I've never heard of such a thing. Yeah.
A supreme, a dictatorship. And so, but the greatest dry fly fishery in the world, if you ask me. And what I saw, and one of the reasons that you're not like a lot of the guys I see that just totally just die, some of them physically just die from alcohol and drug abuse because they're just so bored. And that was where I used to say people go to the Bighorn to die because it's so good, so easy. But what I saw happen there, that the greatest dry fly fishery I think that's ever existed, guys started chasing bobbers because it was easier. and they quit doing, they quit. The difference in being, to me, a great guide, you can be a great bobber chaser, you can be a great streamer guy and do nothing but streamers, blah, blah, blah. Any one of the disciplines you want to choose, but you didn't do that. You kept doing all of them. And what I see, and that's where I see the burnout, when you say, you said you chose not to chase the bobber, and or as much.
In the beginning, you kind of have to, because you're trying
to find your fish. Yeah. That's how you do it. But then you watch rivers become pretty much exclusively catch the fish. And the bighorn being, to me, the single, well, at one point it was fish count and all that, the biggest there was, but the single best learning tool in the history of the world. You could go there and you could follow an emergence. You could go, you'd have to, you know your net has, it has shrimp everywhere and scuds. I mean, it's got all this, just a plethora of things that could make it a great fishery. And so you could do everything. You could follow the hatch and you could nymph, you could run your, you could swing an emergent, you could, you know, however you wanted to fish a dry dropper, total dry, spinner, go back and start all over and swing. You had everything possible and giant fish that, and the highest fish count other than the green in the world, right? And so, but what happened? You watch guys started chasing bobbers and killing themselves from drugs and alcohol afterwards because they just didn't want to go do it. It was too easy. Well, it's not easy if you take it through the whole frickin' thing. And that's, and on rivers like this, and a lot of great rivers, you see people get kind of locked into a technique specifically to catch fish. So that at the end of the day, all they care about is catching a fish. And that was striking to me because I'm older than frickin' Job now. And I'm watching all these things, and I was thinking about Flip Pallet pulling his boat, and he made this statement, which is most people think went over his head, that he's pulled further than he's walked in his life. And, you know, he's talking about pulling rubber rafts, not rafts, but like things you lay on in the sun, out into the Gulf when they're kids. And it was like, that's passion, right? That's wanting to learn everything. And I think that's the difference, besides all the things that you said before, is that not wanting to, not getting trapped in just catching fish, right?
That's what does it.
That's what kills you.
You go to the same spot, the same stretch,
same
every day.
Yeah, run the same line. Don't go to the other, there's some son of a bitch in my run. We'll just post up and wait.
Yeah.
Go to the other side of the river. Go down the middle of the damn thing. Who knows what might happen, right?
Yeah.
And that was what I was trying to get at, is that there's more to it than just that time on the water and the observation of the water. Then you've got to be willing. Like, I'll tell you another one that's like the Renaissance sort of thing. 1983, I think it was, I was guiding Jim Teeny, and he's swinging flies in Michigan. Nobody swang flies in Michigan.
Teeny flies?
That's all he ever fished. Yeah. He's never fished anything since 73. He's never fished anything.
Would you like to at least explain to people what that is? People have no idea what a teeny nymph is now.
Well, if you don't know who Jim Teeny is, you're pretty new in this bit. I mean,
there's a lot of new people.
Jim is the guy who integrated sinking lines. Jim is the guy who integrated, in the old days when we would swing, we would have lead core heads, right? And you kept them with you. And who knows what you use for your line, you know. A lot of people just use big level lines, but you would keep a leader wallet. And Jim integrated those, so you had a T-130, 200, 300 connected to your running line. So he's the guy who did that. And then he came up with the world's ugliest yet effective fly, and it's called a teeny nymph. And Jim was a legendary angler, and he still is. And he was, but his deal was he only fished his fly.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's got like, I don't know how many world records on it, but it just all that, that's all he did. But Jim came back when I went the second year I was in business and did a, and he came back because I bought a lot of lines, and they didn't sell lines in the East Coast. I ordered 3 130s, I think, and 6 200s and 300s, and I'm just opening, right? And he says, how many do you want? And I thought I offended him. Like, I'm not selling you 12 lines or whatever it was, right? And I go, isn't that enough? He goes, that's more lines than I've sold that side of the Mississippi ever. I'm like, no shit. I said, well, come back. And he did. He came back to a seminar at the Detroit show, and he fished with me, and he swung, which got me into swinging for steelhead more. But at that point, we were, for all the Euro nymph people that think they invented the, we were running amnesia in the late 60s and 70s. Not amnesia. It was whatever gold Stren came out. That was a big one, or Stren, I mean. And then we went to Bruce Richards and Ray Schmidt designed the competition that they call now, but was a 023, 027 running lines. Mm-hmm. So we are, and we're running swivel, swivel, double fly, slinky rigs were new, that was coming out, and all this stuff. That's how you fish steelhead.
Yeah.
You nymph fish steelhead with eggs, basically. And then it now, all the guys your age or your generation says, well, you know, and it was Walt Grau was the first guy to spay fish, maybe one of the first guys in the States. And, but there was a lot, Feenstra and a bunch of those guys started saying, well, I've had enough chuck and duck. I've had enough of pretending I'm, you know, fly fishing when I'm running monofilament. And it's not, right? Mm-hmm. And so you, and here comes this whole new generation of cats just swing now, right? And that can become pigeonholed too, where if very that's all so. You do, that's all you do,
yep.
Right? And but yours, you kept going with it, right? And you kept not just nymphs, not just dries, not just streamers, which everybody thinks that's all we do. And you learned and you followed your hatches. That's what makes great anglers. What makes great dogs is a muzzle.
We've got a barking dog, so we're gonna come back to this in a moment. Okay, we've got the dog inside.
Hello, Ellie.
I'm sure she'll want to go back out in about
30 seconds, 35 maybe. She might go in the back and sleep. But that to that point, when you think about the great, when I grew up, man, if you didn't know Latin and you didn't couldn't basically explain an entire hatch process and follow it, you weren't there, right?
I used to make flashcards when I first got caddis flies from La Fontaine, and I knew all these caddis names, and I knew all these mayflies, and then I remember thinking, like, at what point is this really going to help me become a better angler? It's not. I need to identify four basic bugs, approximate size and color, and how the fish are eating them, and I've forgotten all the Latin. I have no idea what it is.
What's the point?
Yeah.
But the
except
and then you'll get the cats that walk in that expound their Latin and get them all wrong.
Well, that was the reason why I wanted to learn it, because people would come in and say, "Where are your brachycentris?" And I was like, "Okay, well, maybe I got
to learn next to the mints."
Oh, yeah, exactly. I do like Artocyche grandis and Ephemerella grandis. Those are the two that always, Green Drake, and that was the great gray spotted sedge.
And then they renamed everything.
Yeah.
And they reclassed everything twice, yeah. I think, since hatches are the first ones that came out.
It's cool. But it's a hobby.
Yeah.
You know?
It is. And it's not the knowing that. It's the understanding this bug swims to the top, this one pupates.
When?
This one does this at what time, at this temperature. And that was so critical to modern dry fly. When I'm always talking about the inception of, you know, when trout strategies and selective trout came out in the early 70s, everybody started following that. And then it went, and that's one of the things why I'm picking on the Euro guys is that the Euro nymphs don't look like anything.
Mm-hmm.
And they fish basically, but they eat the hell out of them. Yeah. I mean, you can't deny that part. And so there's the point of understanding. It's you know, and I like to equate it to other things because, you know, in the general tackle, that everybody knows their bait fish and what zones they go in and what time. And if you're a hunter, you learn your animal. And one of the things that kind of where I was going with that whole pigeonholing yourself as just a Euro nympher or just a streamer guy or just a dry guy, it takes that away.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a lot of it away. And that's where the burnout comes from people who just
just do that. That's what they do. They do, I nymph fish.
You can't take that away from people, though. I mean,
no, you got to put fish in
the I've never said, you know, no one has ever asked to be born. We're sort of brought into this world and said, here you go. What do you want to do? You know, does that make you happy? Is that what really completes the circle for you? Have at it, man. Mm-hmm. I mean, if that's what, at the end of the day, if you don't want to take it forward, or what, and what is forward, more power to you. But I just, for me, I've always liked moving on to another chapter to try and again, you never figure it out 100%, but once you start to feel like you have your finger on the pulse of a mm-hmm. certain type of river, a certain hatch, a certain time of year, and you can basically look over a period of years and say, these are consistent changes that I see, and I can see results based on my catching ability or something like that. Then you move on to something else. Like you got, I like to keep it fresh. I think one of my favorite things to do, or like when people say, how do you stay hungry when you're guiding? I've always said, you basically need to change up the water. You really do. I try never to fish the same spot, the same section, probably more than 3 days in a row. If I can, I'm lucky that I can do that. Sometimes you can't. I mean, you know, there's people in Idaho where it's, you know, three times, you can only put three outfitters or three guides per outfitter per day at certain ramps. So somebody on the lower end might have to fish the same stretch that they maybe didn't choose. But at the same time, when you're younger, you know, it doesn't matter, because you should, the first 3 or 4 years, you should be as hungry as you ever have been. After that, it just kind of depends on your personality and if you think this is for you or not. But I like to always try.
We were talking about the burnout, though, and that's yeah. and the way you burn out is go
job.
You know,
it is a job. I mean, don't get me wrong.
Go after bait a 3 mile in the bighorn every freaking day of your life.
Yeah,
and run the exact same run or run lines to pal every freaking day. And
some
only
do
this.
Yeah, some people.
Yeah, but
do it
when
well.
You see them, they don't fish anymore. That's my point. Is that the difference is, if you go just as that, you're not learning. There was a guy over on the Bighorn, Gale, and he wouldn't allow it. And he's the only guy I knew that fished. I mean, a lot. And he kept logs. And the bugs are the same. It's always the same. But he didn't let it turn into go and punch the clock, you know, go to the factory and put the hubcaps on the car and get out and go home and mm-hmm. drink and, you know, beat your dog. Everything was fresh because he made it fresh. That's mm-hmm. what you did. You not
I've
going to the same
the ability,
water.
I've had the ability to do that. I don't work in a lodge, and I would be a terrible guide at a lodge where it's a set time. You pick up at 8:30, you go to the river at 9, you have your people back by 4:30. And they have cocktail hour at 5. I'd be really bad because what...
Yeah, we've seen it.
Yeah, I'm not good at following a clock. I never have been. But I try and go when the window's the best. And so that might be, hey, I'll see you at 5:30. Or, hey, you know, it's really not getting good until, you know, 11. That's fish from 11 till dark. I mean, you go when the window is there. Mm-hmm. But generally speaking, you're, you know...
Well, we've got a unique...
We do
system for us because yeah. We're not supplying, you know, making people come back for dinner and stuff like that. And
when you center it around the food, you know, on a busy river, it'd be frustrating. If you're on a river where there's not a lot of pressure and it doesn't matter when you get out, I guess that would be fine. But you know, I like being on the water earlier, late, and I don't like punching that 9 to 5 if I don't have to. And sometimes that's the best window too, but very rarely in my opinion.
But that's what keeps guides, in my opinion, having had hundreds of you in my corral out there. It's
how many guides do you think you've employed since you started?
I don't know, 100 or so.
100?
Maybe a little. Depends, you know. Like how many here that guys have guided twice for us or that. I mean, but just
well,
as
mean,
a full-time
roster, full, full,
a full-time
part-time
thing,
guides that are doing 30 a year or more.
30 to 100, 200. Yeah. I don't know. I'd have to probably less than 50 total. But even back in, you know, Michigan, we had such a long season. Gee, truly, if you wanted to.
You'd do over 200.
Oh, lots of, I mean...
Yeah.
I had lots of guys that did that. I did that a couple times. But you could do year round. I mean, no problem. I wouldn't be surprised. A lot of the guys gotten older, but like on the Muskegon and the Big M, even the PM, the Ensemble, I mean, shit. I was looking at Kelly Newman's. Kelly could easily do 250 without blinking.
Yep.
I mean, there's a guy that keeps driven, right? He's doing the Atlantic thing there now and does Lake Huron out in the lake, casting for giant, you know, steel and bronze.
Well, I mean, species diversity and
it's ridiculous.
The amount of, yeah, it's crazy.
And it's
out
not,
here, we don't have a long season because we have
Well, and you got mountains and elevation and it's cold and it's windy and it's froze.
14
and
degrees.
Your boat launches are missing because there's 50 foot of snow on them.
Big Sky is really the only place where somebody like Trey, you know, he can
do it. You can do it on the Mo. You can do it on the Bighorn, easy. You just have to have brass balls if you're going to go out and fish some of that weather.
Yeah.
But I mean, as far as a true fishery, you know, the Lower Henry's Fork, you could do the fork.
People don't come here to fish in the winter.
No.
They do it as, like, you know, in Big Sky and stuff, if you're there for a week and you want to fish a day.
You think about what made, like, the guys that I think of here, skinny, you know, Trey, guys like that, that are just so good and so fishy. Skinny was great skier, right? Mm-hmm. Always ski, but he never missed the midge hatches. He'd drive up and hit all the midge hatches. They're guys that just never stop fishing.
Mm-hmm.
That's the difference, you know. They never stop. They keep learning. You know what else I think makes really great guides is tying. Or at least they're thinking of the fly. And even if they don't tie, you know, it's like watching Trey come in and start sorting through the flies in the bins, and he's not talking to anybody, and he's looking, and he's
Trey
like,
would have like five different dye lots of medium brown crystal flash, and be like, they were on 1 and 3 last month,
exactly.
But it's much better on the 4 and 5, you know, and he'd have them all like,
lined
like, dude,
up.
It's the same, it's the same.
Yeah,
but no, I mean, they're very particular people. This profession, especially with fly tying, people who are good at fly tying and fishing, attracts some very interesting cats, and they're very, very particular about
opinionated,
yes,
and big time,
you know,
but
what?
It's the
if
same
they,
everywhere.
Yeah,
I mean, it's the same if you're out in the ocean. I mean, I would love to sat and talk to Andy about blue water stuff. And I was watching a guy, I can't remember what you call it when you spine a fish and you sew them back together. I don't know if they still do that, and that so it swims a certain way. And there's guys that would take part of a spine out and they'd take the back, you know, from behind the dorsal. Some guys go right in front of the behind the pecs, and they're sewing these things back together and they're trolling these things really fast, but they're swimming a certain way and they're after blue mud. I guarantee there's a reason people succeed, you know, that are all the Tom Brady's didn't, you know, maybe the first one or two were just by chance. The rest of them probably weren't by chance, right?
Yeah.
It was like
it's the tinkering.
Yeah, and it's yeah, exactly. It's
constant tinkering.
And the same with the bass guys. You know, any of them, you watch them, you see guys tuning on something, bending this, turning that. They're just that's the drive.
Yep.
And then you see the guys that are sitting down at the gravel bar at 6 o'clock every night, the rest of their life, and they just got to get. You don't want to go fish. You don't want to do anything. The difference is keeping the drive. That's what it's about. That's how you get to a level. And then it's got to have some, I mean, it's like Antley, you're talking about Andy. Some of it's got to be just gray matter. I mean, the fact that you can retain these freaking dates that you do. Oh, remember 2018?
It is weird.
Hatch was so great. I'm like,
yeah.
No.
It's funny.
I don't remember
you say that, but you just mentioned the first day you were on the Bighorn in 83, August 29th,
yeah,
something like that.
I mean,
you've got it, too.
Pretty monumental day when the river opens.
Okay, all right.
Closed for 19 years.
Okay, so I think that there's, to wrap up that a little bit, being...
where did we go?
Which is really hard.
I blacked out. Okay. I have no idea where I am.
So, yeah. Fishy, two but, parts.
It's not really just supposed to be blowing sunshine up Johnny's ass. I mean, it's a metaphor for, I mean, people that get great like he did at where he does, it's across the board. And I mean, in it, as far as, and people watching this, a lot of people want to get great. They want to get
really great anglers on this river too. It's pretty fun to watch.
How often do you watch Rick Welly walk his freaking boat down the river? I could do it all my life.
Yeah, it's awesome.
I mean, here's a cat that just dissected this thing. He had his own rules. He did his thing. I mean, the fact when he retired, it was just, I used to love those days I'd get across from him when we were talking, watching Rick Welly walk that spot where we were talking about Hunter and my fish and Skinny's fish. Watching Rick rock that water with his boat.
I know.
And I was like, here's a guy that's just basically just a dry guy, but ascended and never burned out.
Yep.
Never once.
But you know what? He is an anomaly. I mean, he fished lines to Windy or lines to Powell every time. And he never got frazzled by everybody around him, because by the time Rick put in, there were 100 boats around him. And by the time he made it down a mile, there had been about 4 hours that had passed. And I would do, on my second run, I would go down and be like, hey, Rick. And Rick would be like literally a mile and a half down from where he started the first time. And so there's two different ways to do it. But when I was coming up,
but he
kept
his passion.
When I was coming up, the two people I watched were Rick Welly and Mikey Syme.
Yeah.
And those are the type of people when you're like, what are they doing? Why are they fishing there and just watching like two rods go up and go, oh, like that much water, 19 inch. Okay, well, obviously I suck and I need to do more of what they're doing. And that's really cool. Like when you get inspired from watching people who are doing something completely different and having incredible success, they figure something out and they didn't read it in a book. They did it by failure, not being afraid to fail.
I said something about Renee, watching Renee here at one of our podcasts where I stalked his ass and he was stalking a fish. And it's kind of the beginning of stalk more, cast less stuff, right?
Yeah.
Watched somebody when they're that good.
Yeah.
I mean, shit, just bring a lunch, dumbass,
it's
and
fun.
Sit there and watch Harry Lemire work runs and just go, damn. So that's how you do
this guy
it.
Gets it.
So if you want to get better, it's time on the water and mindset of wanting to improve. And I think that
also not being afraid to fail.
Yeah.
So much of it comes from failure, like, and not being afraid to. Like, I like making, like, going through and checking boxes, being like, what if they did this, this, and this, and this? And like, okay, they didn't do any of that. We'll come back to that two or three other times during different conditions before we write that off. But a lot of it comes through trial and error.
I mean,
and
you
a lot of failure
through failure.
Yeah.
Right. So failing, then I think a big part of, you know, ascending to, let's call it godlike status.
No such thing here.
Ascending to becoming fishy, a great angler. Johnny doesn't like compliments.
No, there's no godlike. You can't master it, man. You can't master it at all.
Whatever this is.
The only godlike people on there are those guys that write in and tell me how great they are and how shitty I am.
Those guys are really good.
They have ascended to godlike status. I have caught more fish than you ever will in your life. Great.
Heroes in their own minds.
Yeah. That's the only... Anybody that gets to a level of this... You realize that you either the biggest freaking egomaniac on earth, or you realize you get a lot more zeros than you get wins. You get a lot more, and this, and I don't care. And I'm not talking going out and nymphing the damn runs, everything. You know, we can all go out and catch 20 fish a day doing that without blinking. But if you just take it to fishing everything, you have to fly tying. I mean, I probably have 50 national patterns. To get to those 50, I have 5,000 complete failures.
How many times do you think we sat across this table and drinking coffee, you'd be there and you would say, I did it.
This is the greatest fly in history.
And take
tomorrow,
it out. And you can catch a fish on anything.
Oh, anything.
I mean, but like when
anything.
You replicate it and it's like, oh. You know,
yeah,
you're really, really good. And that's the only good thing I'm going to say about you. But you're really, really good fly designer because you didn't get wrapped up in the details that you really, really like that people get impressed about or on the camera. But what? 1 out of 15? 10? That's pushing.
10 would be minimum.
Yeah. 1 out of 15, I would say.
I mean, like, I can't tell him, or you would say that we'd sit in there, like you said, across the mist, and I'd say, this is the greatest fly in history of the world, you pissing. Come back and next day, Giant, how'd that fish? What?
Yeah.
Oh, that fly?
Yeah.
I never
I fished
said
it three times. Yeah.
It was like, no. And it's like, I have boxes full of those.
Yeah.
Boxes.
Yeah.
Of like, I'm going to keep trying it here. Like,
but when you hit it, man.
When you hit one, it's like, okay.
It's a great feeling. It's a really great feeling.
But the only way you hit it is to fail with it. And even if you hit it, you still have to keep going and doing it. Mm-hmm. Just like fishing, everybody has those hero days.
Yeah.
You know, I'm always curious when I listen to one of these dipshits that write in and tell me how great they are. How many days you fish a year, right? I mean, if you fish 200 days a year or more, and you hit it every day, I definitely want to fish with you. Mm-hmm. Because I have fished on the best water with the best anglers in the world and guided the best. And we get our ass kicked proportionately. Mm-hmm. I mean, and it's never, there's never more good days than bad days, right? It's mm-hmm. it's just, failure's part of it.
Yep.
That's what we were talking about some other podcast about that later, where one of them, we were talking about how, you know, the hunt and the pure joy of failure is what I think. And I think a lot of it, if you have the luxury to fish as much as we do, and always, I mean, I don't remember back in my journals that not hitting 200 days was pretty, between guiding and fishing, was really rare for me for 30 some years, maybe 40. And more failure than win, but wasn't it failure of catching fish, but wasn't a failure of a day. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember fish days where you and I would go and just, you know, absolutely brutal days. Nobody's pissed off at the end. We're wiped out. It was like, and then you and your stupid, could be the greatest day of our life. No, it's been 10 hours of sub-zero shit, and we're going home. But you just...
I have good circulation.
Yeah.
It's not as bad for me as it is for most people.
It's the mindset of making yourself... It's not just the fish. It's that people that don't want to learn... And, you know, that don't want to learn always, mm-hmm. I don't know how you'd possibly fish for more than a year and just say, this is bullshit, I'm out.
Okay, so I think that that's a great tie into kind of the rubric of how to get better. So first is time on water, right? That makes you good. Then the mindset, being able to analyze water, like really dive in, you take the next jump to really good. And then from what it sounds like, to get to great, you have to be able to avoid burnout, because there's no way you can go fish 200 days a year and, you know, 5, 6, 7 years and avoid burnout if you're doing the same thing over and over again. There's cases, but they're rare. So then the avoiding burnout, I think, is the kind of mindset of like you hit all different types of water, you're changing the sections you're constantly in. I think another big part of it is why you're going fishing. Like, is putting fish in net the goal, or is learning and improving the goal?
I think it changes based on how long you've been doing it. I can't deny that when I first got here and you're on the Madison River and you have all these different options, I mean, first thing I want to do is catch as many fish as possible.
Yeah, absolutely.
Know? And most of that was nymphing and trying to figure out all the different nymphs. We have tons of nymphs in the store.
Also tells you where your fish are too.
Correct.
Which gives you your confidence to go out and fail.
Right. You've got to be able to catch fish before you can go not catch fish. Right.
Yeah, like on the hunt for big fish, that was one thing he always said was basically, I fish bait and then mm-hmm. I figure out where those fish are. And then I go back with artificial.
Yeah. And my bait, lures.
No, not you. Hunt for big fish.
Oh, with the Larry Dahlberg show?
Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's how I did it. That's how we all did it.
Yep, so me too.
You fished.
But I think...
In the old days, I think people fished more, at least in where I grew up, I mean, and you started fishing bait,
mm-hmm.
and then that taught you where your fish were, right? Mm-hmm. And then you, if you were lucky enough, you threw spinners or something else, and then, because people surely, it's not like today, nobody started fly fishing. I mean, that was 1 out of 1,000 people. And I've said this thousands of times, I have never seen in the old days, it's different now because kids do start fly fishing early, but I never saw a really great, my generation and probably down to about you, seriously great angler that didn't start bait fishing, that didn't learn to stalk.
Well, we all start, like that goes back to the nature versus nurture. The nature is like some kids are just born with the rod in their hand. That's what they want to do. That's all they think about. I found some of like my, my mom was getting rid of all this old stuff in their house. And they had all these notebooks from like third grade and she saved everything. And all this is just fish hooks and just like scribbles. Obviously I didn't learn anything, but that was on my mind from a very early age. But I think getting back to that subject, I think everybody starts off wanting to catch a lot of fish. And then, you know, it's like the law of diminishing returns. When you have those 50 fish days for the first time, it's like, whoa, this is incredible, you know? And then it's like, okay, do I want to continue to do this? Do I need to catch 50 fish? Do I need to catch 100 fish?
I think
fish?
You do in the beginning.
Yeah.
If I caught 50 fish, I'd say, I wonder if I can get 80 tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, but that's, yeah. And as a guide, you know, from a guide perspective, what you, that's your job.
Yep.
But you also, that's where the burnout can come. Chasing just the number.
Chasing the numbers.
And then, because it's kind of what I'm kind of always picking on the Eurocats about. Yeah, you catch a lot of.
The competition is based on numbers.
Yeah, you catch a lot of fish. And then you say, but it's, and I watch, I do it too. And their day, you know, it's a blast to go out and catch a whole ship ton of fish, right? But then I'm seeing the guys who are going to stick or gals who are going to stick in this are going to be the ones who finally, last year, this summer, I had three different guys that I can think of who said that they just burned out. And they wanted to figure out this dry fly thing.
Yeah.
And these guys fished here for...
They got a whole new chapter.
They fished for 10 years, and I was like... Holy shit, you mean this is all you've ever done? Yeah.
Yeah.
So, really?
Yeah, and then you get to progress, and you get to go figure out a whole new chapter, right. And then you get to streamers. And it's hard to be a really, 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 really good at all three of them because they all require a lot of time spent. And if you're just doing streamers or you're in dries or whatever, it takes a long time to really catalog all three of those. But go ahead, you're...
Remember first time I came out to Montana, I hired a trout spay guide when I was learning how to do that named Lawrence Stumke, Bozeman guy. And he told me...
Lawrence worked for us for a while, didn't he?
I don't think so.
He's a great guy. He's hanging out here.
He walked me through the kind of, as he saw it, the progression of the average angler. And when you start out, you want to catch fish. Then you get to the second stage, which is wanting to catch a lot of fish. Then you want to catch... big fish, then you want to catch the fish, whether that's permit, steelhead, whatever that is.
Robert Travers, the guy who wrote this.
Okay, yeah, so Lawrence was what he told me. And then the last part of that is, you know, that you get to a point where you just want to have fun fishing. And I don't think it's true for everybody. I kind of jumped around those levels and I'm somewhere in the middle still. I like catching big fish. I don't really care about catching a lot of fish, never really have. But I think that it's a general outline that people tend to kind of follow.
Oh, I agree. And it comes full circle and it's like what makes you happy. I personally, if I go fishing, I'd rather be in an area where I know I have a shot at a giant and not catch anything than catch 20, 16 to 18 inch fish on whatever. I love the winter because it forces me. It's the only time I fish 5X. Sometimes I fish 6X, and I go from chasing big fish all fall to basically carrying a fly box with four patterns and fishing dries or dry dropper to rising fish for an hour to 2 hours a day during the heat of the day. No early morning, nobody out there. That's fun to me because I just kind of decompress from trophy hunting.
And that's the how to avoid burnout, right? As you're changing your tactics, you've got different goals, and it kind of keeps it all fresh.
Essentially,
right?
When we talked about the rules, the July rules.
It's rules. Yeah, exactly.
That's probably what he just said is what could have described what we were talking about how I do my July rules with just make it up stupid mm-hmm. shit, right?
Yeah, we could have made that a pretty short show.
It really was. I mean, we could have just said that. And it is a decompress. Mm-hmm. It's a decompress, but it's also when you only get X shots, you're going to make them work. You're going to make it happen.
Yeah.
You know, if you're in a, and you know, you don't get to decompress from a boat very easy in that midge fishing stuff.
No.
You're on foot, you're kind of, you know, little man in the black pajama thing, and you're, here we are, eyeball
yeah.
to eyeball.
Yeah.
And it's
fun.
And it's a short win. And yeah. that's kind of what I was getting at about guys that retained, you know, they go winter fishing by themselves.
Yeah.
That's the difference. That's
like Russ, like he goes and fishes bluegills through the ice. You know, like to me, I think that's awesome. And
I look up Russ's countdown to Hardwood.
Yeah.
For those of you who don't know Russ Madden, one of the greatest, he is the most unique mind, I think, in fly fishing history. It's a free radical. Boom, boom, it's yeah. everywhere. But it's like, he's got a countdown to hard water because he loves.
Yeah.
And he also designs some of the best bluegill jigs in history.
But yeah, but you know, he's fishing streamers hard all year or dries or whatever. And then it gets to a point, the eyelets freeze and it gets freezing yeah. and it's, you know,
time to spot a hole through it.
It's time to drill a hole, you know, and that's what makes him happy. I think that's great. Like that, I think that's really cool. So there is a decompression that happens there. And I mean, it would be cool to get a trophy bluegill, but I think just the fact that it brings you back to something simpler where you're enjoying, catching a 13-inch fish on a dry fly. It's fun, you know, and it kind of helps you not take it so seriously so that you can come back in the spring re-energized, ready to look for him again. And that's what I enjoy.
It's cathartic.
Yeah, but I do. That's what makes me happy. I really like being in an area where I know I have the opportunity to catch a truly large fish. And at the end of the day, if it didn't happen, I try not to think about how many fish I put it by, but I enjoy the process of it and the tension, because any cast, it could happen. And that's kind of where I'm at and probably will be for a while. That's just my thing.
I agree with everything you said there. I think it's the process of it that I really enjoy. And then I'm very ADD, but fishing is something that I can lock in on. And just like,
you're ADD?
Yeah. Yeah, shocking.
Kelly's ADD.
Yes.
You're not nearly as ADD.
Well, I guess ADD is a spectrum.
Don't look up at the light.
Yeah. But it's, you know, it's the process of it all. It's, you know, you find a reason you love it and then do that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't. You know, the guys are going to stick. Are going to stick, and I never can quit. I bring him up constantly. I just never can quit. Stop thinking about two people: Dave Ellis, who still fishes with a
dog
fever. He just like, you know, he's 86 this year, I think. But I love Jack Ford's book. Jack Ford's one of my guiding heroes. He's a little older than me, but we guided all our lives in Michigan, and he wrote a book, and it's called From the Center Seat.
Between Two Seats. It's Between the Seats.
It's From the Center Seat, I think.
I
got the freaking book sitting over there. I can go get it. The point is, it's his, and Jack was not a full-time guide all his life. I mean, he was a big-time exec for Ford, I think, and I mean, overseas, and he had a real life. The view from the middle seat.
I stand corrected.
We both are. And so, but I mean, I think about that. I don't know why I get so hung up on guides that you're getting burnt out, because I think it's one of the most giant tragedies. Because
I know, man. I think about it all the time.
You get to choose. This isn't freaking Russia. You got to choose your job, right? And it's like the greatest job in history. You're outside. You get to be with people you're friends with. You become friends with. I mean, you end up, a lot of times you end up with lifetime friendships out of this stuff, and you're outside, and you're not getting to fish, but you knew that. And then you watch people just spiral and poof and burn out and they're dead, right? It's like game over. It's tragic. Or people who, I think it's because we love it so much that I can't imagine burning out, right? And then you watch people who loved it so much, and it's like, if I never fish again in my life, great. Who
this
cares?
Is one of the first things you said when I got here in 03 was, well, I mean, obviously you're not going to guide because you don't know the river. I hope you don't really want to. And I was like, oh yeah, I really want to. I think it's the best job in the world. And there was just this like exhale of like a million different things going on in your brain that I had no, I had no idea what you were thinking about. And cause I idolized it and I idolized the people that did it. I thought these were like, you know, and there are, but there are so also a lot that they get into it and you kind of wonder after about the third or fourth year, like, do they really enjoy their job? I just can't imagine like not, I get up in the morning and I'm still excited to go to work. And that's another thing too. People are like, do you guys follow the barometer? Do you follow your, like your lunar cycles? And I say no, and I do it on purpose because if I ever, I never want to know if I'm gonna hit the minor or the major or whatever. I have to go to work, mm-hmm. right? And I wanna go out every day thinking I'm gonna try and figure some stuff out. And I would hate to go into it going, you are gonna get your ass kicked. I would prefer that at the end, not at the beginning. But getting back to that, I think that if you really like it, there's ways to differentiate yourself from everybody else, figure out what your program is, make it work for you. And if you don't like to do something, don't do it because your clients need it. Make them better at something you enjoy. And in a way, you're trying to show people kind of your enjoyment and your world and take them to different pieces of water. I have people that have that live around here that I've taken that they've been here 25 years and never fished below Palisades. I'm like, you've got all this incredible river, which for Palisades, if you guys don't know, we're in the upper river from the Quake Lake down to Palisades. It's probably 20 miles. There is another 25 miles that they've never fished. Essentially all the way down to lake.
There's another one down to...
And then there's another one down to Three Forks. Yeah. So, I mean, there's all this water. I think a lot of it is showing people different stuff and showing yourself different stuff because there's fish everywhere. And if you're not doing well in some section, then you should, instead of going back to the safe haven... I mean, I remember that when I was first starting.
That was
starting.
The beginning of this when I'd say, where are you going?
Yeah.
Because you didn't go to the same spots.
Yeah. And I like to go to the places where I did get my ass kicked because I saw people catching fish. And I'm like, well, they're doing something I'm not, you know? And that's how you keep it fresh.
You say that barometer thing. I had a flashback to Dave Roller. Was he your first guide ever, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Dave's bigger than Johnny.
I actually, yeah.
God,
yeah.
He's got,
hard to believe.
Oh my God,
two.
He's such
a big dude.
He is such a great guy. But Red Man Ben, below Branch Bridge, and I used to always.
Dave,
I would always. I was always quitting chewing. I finally did it about, but I chewed all my life, and I'd get down to the river, and I'd be like, okay, I'm going to quit. This is my week to quit. And I'd get down there and I'd see Dave and I'm like, dude, you got any chew? And one time, Red Man Bend was just a run that we set up on a lot. And I'm jonesing for some chew. And we both chewed Red Man. And he was always on that run. You couldn't beat Dave to the river. I tried it once. I got up at... Throw my guy, just got up at 4:30. So I'm going to beat Roller. I didn't want his run. I just wanted to beat him. Just to say I did it once, right? Mm-hmm. And I get up and we launch a boat. And I'm like telling guys, hurry up. Get your shit down here. You got to run this truck up. Run up truck up top. That was at Green Cottage. And it was going to Waddell's on the PM. And I run up there and I get down and I get back in the boat. I said, he's going to be so bad. He's going to, you can't wait. When he shows up, notice this light turns on. He's 20 feet below me. He's there the whole time. He goes, I had a feeling you're going to try that. Oh my God. Something beat me. And he waited for me. And he just sat there. I was like, who does it?
What does that have to do with the barometer?
Nothing. But
all right.
But he was just this guy, right? And so I come down to Red Man Ben, and I've been getting my ass kicked. And I'm just kind of, especially when I was getting my ass kicked, I wanted to chew. And mm-hmm. I don't have any chew. And come down there, and I said, well, Roller will be down at this run, because he's always down here. Dave would run. He'd go out at 4 in the morning and sit up and wait. And he basically fished maybe two runs, you know. And he just knew him, and he just, it was real easy for him.
Is
and he'd go down.
Steelhead season?
Huh? Yeah.
Okay.
And so I get down around the corner, and I don't see his boat, and I'm like, oh, my God. And I'm dying here. And there's a bag of Red Man hanging up a tree on a hook. Fresh, brand new bag. Knowing I would be behind him, right? He was like, yeah, that's psychic. But anyway, I get, and I've got my favorite run on that whole stretch. And I got fish. I can't buy a fish. They are just, whether it's barometer, whatever it is in the world that tells fish they you know, kiss our
they're
ass.
Off.
And I get down, and it was spring. And, you know, a lot of times when it's going to be warm and you've got snow and, you know, swamps, water, and it warms up, you actually drop your water temperatures because the stuff comes in and it'll drop it. And I'd stepped on my thermometer and I was like, damn it, I can't figure it out. And you know, a little bit of looking for a Band-Aid for your ego. And I come around the next bend or so, and I said to Dave, because basically summed up what you just said, I said to Dave, I says, did you take a water temp? He says, doesn't matter. I'm here 8 hours no matter what.
Exactly.
He says, I gave up on that a long time ago. And it was like, exactly. You're just going to fish, and you're going to take your lickings, you're going to take your wins.
We do have a step up on you guys from back in the day. I mean, now that we have the wonders of the internet, which is not without its evils, probably more evils than positives, but we have an entire USGS site dedicated to water flows and temperature, and we can plan our day accordingly in ways that you guys never were able to. So if you know it's going to be a cold night, 15 degrees colder than the night before, you're going to have a plunge in water temperature. You're going to know that bite window is probably going to be not great at first light. Mm-hmm. I prefer to be in at first light. Well, maybe we'll get behind everybody like this fall. You know, you had your first light bite, sun come up, 8 o'clock to 11, wouldn't chase. So I was just like, all right, you know, let's go when it's good, you know, and you can look at the graph and go, okay, you know, we're about a half an hour before it starts getting up into the, you know, mid 40s or whatever. And it was, our bite window was, you know, noon to dark, and you can plan accordingly based on that. So we do have all these, you know, tools and information that we, and that's really the only one I use is graphs for water flow. Some rivers fish better on a rise than others. Some don't fish on a rise. Some fish on better on a drop.
Some it wasn't needed. That hard.
Yeah.
Back then.
You look at a stick, went up 6 inches.
You knew if you could, we've always had weather girls. I'd have to watch certain
weather
channels.
Yeah. Well, for a long time, you used to only watch LA weather, even though it had no.
Vera Hermanez? Are you kidding me? What are you talking about?
Yeah, Dallas Rain and all that. You're like, what's the weather supposed
Vera
to be?
Vera Hermanez.
I know, but it's supposed to be 89 in LA today. Boy, that weather chick's hot.
She also did the traffic, and I watched my ex. Wife Penny got me for something, Christmas or Valentine or something, the West Coast feed so I could watch Vera again. I went to my first time I flew into LA, I went into LAX, go down, and the guy says something, I'm renting a car, and he said, you need a map? No. I knew every exit. I says, I know, just stay off Ranch Cucamonga between 3 and 2. Or 2 and 3, it's always the same. And I take off, and he goes, is that the 5? He goes, yes, I'm golden. I knew every exit in the whole freaking place.
That's great.
All right, well,
that's fishing in a net.
That's a great place to end this show. We'll wrap it up here.
Did we get to all three of the things?
No.
What was the third one?
We got to like half of one.
No, well, we're going to shoot another one. Spoiler alert, we're going to stop this and then start a second one. So
what a drag.
For all these, for all our viewers out there, questions, you know, comments, anything, drop them down below. Like, subscribe, all that stuff. Support our online business. We'll talk about that a little bit in the next episode. And we will see you next Tuesday.
See y'all.